Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm Trevor Sycamo. With me is Benjamin Solak. Ben, it is a beautiful Tuesday morning for us releasing this podcast. It might not be Tuesday morning for people listening, but regardless, is everything still delicious, Ben?
Trevor, silly questions, needless questions. Everything is delicious. I appreciate
it. Did you see on Twitter last week that somebody made the shirt that just had your Twitter AV on it, but it just said at the top, everything is delicious?
Yes, which, man.
We have the best fans, dude. I love everybody who listens to this podcast.
And here's the amazing thing is that I think if you meet me and you know me, that you think of me in one way. And then if the only piece of information that you had about me was that I said the phrase, everything is delicious, and I have the Abby I do on Twitter, that you'd think a whole different thing of me. Because I didn't realize when you put that Abby with that quote, man, I look like a D-bag. And I hope that that's not really how I am in general.
It's funny, man. I laughed so hard when I saw somebody post that. I would 100% buy that shirt if we actually sold it. Which we need to.
Listen, we petition Rob.
Yeah, to make the shirt. Rob, print up the shirts. We got people looking to buy them. We expanded the store, though. I want to note that, beginning of the show. The last couple weeks, we've been doing pre-sale stuff on the TDN store, and now we got all kinds of stuff. It's not the pre-sale anymore, Ben. It's the full-blown sale.
Yes, and it looks V-nice, if I do say so myself. The full gold shirt with the black logo.
Sexy.
Oh, man. It's no hesitation, brother.
No, so we got all kinds of new stuff in the store. Guys, check that out. It's the same link that it was before. What? Repeat it again for the fans.
TheDraftNetwork.store. It's like TheDraftNetwork.com, but instead of being a com, it's a store.
Should be easy enough to remember, since you guys all have TheDraftNetwork.com memorized and ingrained into your heads. We are gathered here today to recap what was week six in the college football season. Ben, it started off pretty rough for me. Well, actually, I just think it's hilarious at this point, because ever since I wrote that thing about UCF, they just keep losing.
Yes, they do.
It's so funny. I'm pretty sure they're 0-2.
Oh, shoot. Wait, now that you're talking about that game now has officially reminded me that there's definitely a different thing that is the best thing I saw this weekend. Do you know what I'm talking about?
In the UCF-Cincinnati game?
After the UCF-Cincinnati game, when Cincinnati won. And then the
same. Oh, God.
For real spicy.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, we're doing that. We're doing that right now. We are doing that right now, because the best thing that both of us saw this weekend, because it's the best thing that every single football fan saw this weekend, when UCF lost to Cincinnati.
I'm watching it again right now.
Cincinnati's social media team. I'm so glad that I brought this up, because we remember to talk about this. Cincinnati, so let me set the stage here for everybody. UCF hadn't lost many football games since 2017. They just haven't, okay? They've been scoring a lot of points. Had Scott Frost for a little bit. Had Josh Heupel for a little bit. Still do. He's bad, though. We're figuring that out.
All right.
They didn't lose to many people. And as a result, the UCF fan base was very loud and proud about their team doing very well. Other teams' fan bases, they didn't like that so much. They're not really fans of hearing from little old UCF. And so it kind of made national attention as UCF continued to win. They had the whole thing when they went undefeated 2 years ago and they claimed the national championship when Alabama won it. They wanted to play Alabama, but obviously there's no way to actually make that happen. So it was just a bunch of fighting back and forth. So there's a lot of disdain for the University of Central Florida's football program around the country.
Couldn't be us.
UCF is located in Orlando, Florida. Mm-hmm. Orlando is most famous for Walt Disney World's resorts.
Oh, my bad.
Okay. they have Magic Kingdom. They've got all sorts of water parks. They've got Epcot. They've got Animal Kingdom. They've got all kinds of stuff, all right? Walt Disney World is crazy. If you guys have never been, there's a reason why it is definitely the most famous thing about Orlando. So Cincinnati, fast forward to last Friday, puts in that work and beats UCF 27-24, which I think was the first time UCF had lost a conference game in over 2.5 years, because they obviously lost to Pitt, so that broke their just like normal streak of like winning streak. It wasn't like a streak because they lost to LSU in the bowl game, but they had a regular season streak.
Right, regular season, non-bowl games, yeah.
Whatever. This was the first conference game that they lost in a long time. So after the game, the buildup is worth it, I promise. Cincinnati's social media team tweeted out the final score of the game, as they often do. But instead of just a normal graphic, what they did was they posted a video. So the final score on there, the video starts to play. And what is it? It appears to be the intro that you see before every single Disney movie. You know, where you're looking at the fireworks over the Magic Kingdom castle, and then it zooms out a little bit, and it plays the... as it zooms out from the castle, and normally, there's a little cursive script that comes up, and it says... I think it's like Walt Disney That's World Disney, or just yeah. just Disney. I think it just says Disney. But this time, Cincinnati posted the final score, and it is that exact video, except for in the cursive script, it says, You hate to see it. Oh, Mike!
Listen, whatever seedy 19-year-old, speaking as a previously seedy 19-year-old, whatever seedy 19-year-old who brought that to his superior, like not sure if it was going to be okay or not, but praying he would have the opportunity to do this if Cincinnati beat UCF, that moment of inspiration, which I can only imagine came at 2:30 a.m., probably on a Friday night, with questionable substances imbibed previously, is a
good way to put it.
As a hero of the 2019 college football season.
Unbelievable.
Nobody wanted the Cincinnati Bearcats to win that game more than that guy right there. Because if they had lost,
Can you imagine if we got robbed?
He would have had to keep that holstered, and the world, it would have been like if somebody stopped Edison from inventing the light bulb. The world would have been deprived and they wouldn't have even known.
I'm so glad we got that moment. Incredible. So anyways, yeah. Josh Heupel's bad. As a head coach.
Pupil.
So Cincinnati won on Friday night. Getting into our... All right, so I guess that's it. I mean, we have other things that are the best things that we saw in scouting, but were there any... do you want to get into the awards right now, or do you want to get into like any other... You know, let's just get into the awards. Which topic do you want to start with for the College Football Award Show for Week 6?
Because we've been talking about good viral social media events, I'm very here to do my all caps, which is in part because of something that was on social media.
Okay.
Iowa State Cyclones were, you know, all rumored to be a, you know, potential winner for the Big 12, and they haven't looked as strong as people thought they were going to. I think they've got like 4, maybe 5 returning starters on offense. They got a few guys who are back on defense. They've been reloading a little bit. And obviously, Matt Campbell's still a good head coach, but they lost some significant NFL talent, right? Hakeem Butler and David Montgomery notwithstanding. So it's been a bit of not a disappointment year, because it's still Iowa State program overachieving by, like, you know, being competitive with Baylor. Like, that's not a sentence that you expected 10 years ago. So not a letdown year, but it's been a bit of a quieter year than some people expected for Iowa State. However, Iowa State laid the wood against TCU. 48-14, I think, was the final score. Maybe 48-21. Mm-hmm. Either way, I think 48-24 sounds right. Regardless, they put it on them. In large part because of a stellar performance by sophomore quarterback Brock Purdy, which, yes, you heard me right, Brock Purdy. If you don't know, the Iowa State true sophomore quarterback, since Brock Purdy, and this coming behind starting quarterbacks like Kyle Kemp and Zeb Nolan. Like, we already had great names. Zeb Nolan. We already had great names at the Iowa State quarterback position. And then a true freshman won the job last year, and his name was Brock Purdy. And it's like, well, shoot, okay. Against TCU, 9 completions on 24 attempts for 2 passing touchdowns, 12 runs for 102 yards, and 2 rushing touchdowns. So he totaled 4 total touchdowns. It was a great performance. There's one critical play in which he scores a running touchdown in the fourth quarter. Zeb Nolan, it's a backfield read option look. He decides to keep the ball, appropriately so. And he's out there. He's challenging the end man on the line of scrimmage to see who's going to win positioning to the pylon, right? And so he's got a lead blocker.
I know exactly what play you're talking about.
Yeah, he pushes the line of scrimmage pretty nicely. He works to the outside. And, like, again, the game is pretty much salted away. He doesn't need this score that badly. He's already had a great game. And also, he's, let's not forget, a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And Broxif Purdy, this hero, this titan of industry, this early quarterback one for 2021, Trevor Lawrence, who, without even looking at this defender, he's got his eyes straight forward, helmet straight forward, he's not even like head up on him, throws the little high step hezzy, the little, you know, like Randy Moss on the sideline, like, look at me, like, you know, like the big fake high step, lead step sort of toe drag thing, which I don't even know what it's called or even why it works, because it doesn't really threaten anything. But he throws that knee up like a rocket. Again, does not even acknowledge, does not even turn his helmet to the corner. He knows this move is going to hit.
This is filthy. He knows it. This is so filthy. So
he throws the little hesitation move. You can find out on my timeline. Wins the corner. Like this, breaks the dude's ankles. He dives for the tackle. He completely misses, barely dodges him. And Purdy makes it to the pylon. This is the first time in I've watched some good running quarterbacks in my day. I've never seen the quarterback pull the high step hesitation move on the outside and just burn a kid on it. So big ups to Brock Purdy. That had me tweeting this past weekend. He's legit. He's legit fun. Now, he might end up being Jordan Lovey in the sense that he's got talent, but we all kind of gas him in the summer and then we realize Jordan Lovey. Yeah.
Yeah.
We all gas him in the summer and then we realize, you know, he's more tools than he has talent, which I'm not saying is necessarily exactly the case with Love, but Love got a lot of push in the summer he didn't necessarily deserve.
Well, I want to make sure that we touch on that because I don't think that either of us are talking about Love necessarily in any of our awards. But when we were previewing college football in last week's episode, we talked about how this game against LSU was going to be the toughest game that Jordan Love faced this season. And I didn't get to watch any of it live, but I went back and I watched a decent amount of the tape as I was doing some prep for the show, and there's some nice throws that Jordan Love makes, and that's always the case, but the pocket presence and the decision-making and just overall his ability to read defenses right now, it's not where it needs to be. And normally, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. Like, it's fine. Obviously, he's a younger-ish quarterback. He's really just still learning the position at a high level. But last week, we also heard Tony Pauline talk about how he could be the first quarterback taken in this draft. And that's where we've got to then now step in and be like, this kid's not ready. Like, hold up. Stop. Stop doing this. This happens every year, and I think I went on a rant. Maybe it was last week in the podcast or whenever it was, where it's this game of telephone. We like this guy. We like little things that he does. And then all of a sudden, like, you keep telling people you like him, and then all of a sudden, here we are. I have no idea how he got here. He's the number one. He could possibly be the top quarterback taken. Right. Nothing happened for that to be the case. Jordan Love is a good prospect with nice tools who you could really get behind as a developmental player. Don't make me have to argue that he's better than Tua Tagovailoa right now, because he's not. So, like, for us to even entertain the fact that Jordan Love would go above Tua, or Justin Herbert even, or even the guy who was playing on the other side of the field that day, Joe Burrow, he is not nearly as polished as any of those guys. And if Jordan Love went into the NFL right now, yes, he might have some really nice throws in games. He'd also be a decent reason why that you would lose football games right now.
Absolutely.
And you have to be able to recognize that. And if you're gonna draft Jordan Love over guys that we've seen have proven success like that, that part doesn't make any sense to me. Jordan Love is a good prospect. He has a lot of tools. He's a guy that you could develop and potentially be a really nice NFL quarterback. Don't let's not make Jordan Love what he is not right now. If you draft Jordan Love in the top 10, let's face it, top 10 quarterbacks, they play right away, man. They're going to bad teams, and even if there's a quarterback in front of them, there's all sorts of pressure. When the losses start mounting, when things don't go aren't going so well, the voices are going to start coming up, and he's going to play before he needs to play. Jordan Love is not ready to play right away. No way. So, yeah. Had to say right. that.
And this is the thing. Like, when it comes to the LSU tape, I agree with you in that sense. I don't think he showed what you were hoping to show. If you were somebody who in the summer was saying this is a first rounder, or somebody who recently was saying this could be quarterback one, it was not a good performance against LSU. The thing that matters to me is that the issues he had against LSU were exactly the same as the issues he's had against other teams. Like, we talk about, oh, you know, the games that you play against these Power 5 competitions, there's a huge games for Group of 5 prospects, small school prospects, because we'll see how you're doing against a different speed of athlete, a different caliber of player. This is more like NFL competition than what you see when you're playing Colorado State and what you see when you're playing UNLV. Okay. Jordan Love has been making risky, unadvisable, careless decisions with the football for years. I've been for a while. He's been making great natural touch throws that you can't teach.
Sure.
For years.
Sure. Both exist.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, when we get challenged as analysts by readers and listeners and viewers and other analysts about production against weaker competition, there are times in which you see a guy like, Derek Carr, you know, up against USC for Fresno, right, where he plays and he had a poor game in that game. Well, it highlighted some of Derek Carr's physical deficiencies. With Love, that wasn't the case. Like, we didn't learn anything in the LSU game. We didn't already know about Love. He's
correct.
Good at X, he's bad at Y.
Correct.
And so the Power 5 games are helpful, and you would have liked to have seen him approach an opponent like LSU differently than he approaches an opponent like San Diego State. I actually shouldn't say San Diego State. San Diego State is quite good, but like the average Mountain West team, because the rest of your, you know, you really need to elevate your team to beat a Power 5 program. It's a different ball game. We acknowledge that. But he played much the same game, and we already knew about these strengths and weaknesses. So I like, is Love stock falling because of the LSU game? Yes, because it was bad, but no more so than the bad decisions he was making last week against San Diego State. He was doing the same thing. You know, so there's always takeaways from games against lesser competition, games against equal competition, and games against better competition. Sometimes when you step up a competition level, you learn something new about a prospect. I don't think this was the case with Jordan Love. I really don't.
No, I agree.
He's same errors, same strengths,
yeah.
Same potential first rounder. Nothing about this year has shaken that. I remember when we were talking quarterbacks back in June, July. You know, for me it was, I thought teams are going to become enamored with Cole McDonald's tools, but really the toolsy developmental prospect they should love is Jordan Love. No one has really fallen into the Cole McDonald trap. Good. But the player that they have become enamored with is Love. That, you know, this is your toolsy project guy. This is him. And it's fine to draft him in the first round. In a class like this with some more known commodities, he probably won't go as high as, you know, the other toolsy Mountain West quarterback named Josh Allen, who went 9th overall. But Love still has first round traits. There's no doubt about that. But what we're seeing here over the course of the first 5-6 weeks of the season is what we've known about Love. Mm-hmm. He's risk prone.
Yes. Yep. What category did you name before that? Which one was it?
I did. We've done all caps and we've done best thing I saw this weekend.
Oh no, I didn't do my all caps yet.
Go for it.
Here's my all caps.
Give me your all caps.
Throw Bryson Hopkins the damn ball.
Oh, hello.
That's my all caps. Okay. He is currently for Purdue. What's Purdue right now? What's the record?
Like
1-4.
1-4.
1-4. All right. Bryson Hopkins, through 4 games, has 14 receptions, which is good for 5th best on the team. And he has the 4th most yards, and yet the 2nd highest yards per catch average, and leads the team in touchdowns. Throw the kid the damn ball.
Yeah.
Especially
because they've been dealing with Rondale Moore health issues.
Right. Rondale Moore, I get it. Manufacture some touches for that dude. He's incredible. That's fine. Bryson Hopkins should be much more involved in the offense, okay? I'm wanting this guy to get the same types of looks. He's not even in the top 50 when it comes to receiving yards in the country. And I just don't think that's right. I don't think that you can have a player who is 6'5", 245, who moves like Bryson Hopkins does, and have him as underutilized as he is. Now, he has 3 touchdowns. The most he's ever had in a season is 4, and that was actually his redshirt freshman year. So he's already got 3 through 4 games, so he's going to beat that record. But only 14 catches, if you multiply that times 3 of the total games that he's going to play this year, that's a career high in catches, but it's still less than 50 catches. And it's still only about 615 receiving yards, okay? I was looking for this guy to get, like, an Evan Ingram bump this year, right? I mean, Evan Ingram had more catches as a sophomore and a junior in back-to-back years than Bryson Hopkins has ever had in any of his years to this point. And he has more receiving yards in those stretches, too. His final year, Evan Ingram went all the way up to 65 receptions with almost 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns. I think Hopkins is probably going to get close to that 8 touchdown level just because of how they're using him there. But Hopkins isn't just a red zone threat, man. He's a freak. He's a freak in how well this guy moves. I love Bryson Hopkins, and I truly think that this is a top 50 player in this 2020 class. I just don't think Purdue's using him as well as they could. And hey, look, I guess maybe if you're not using him as much, I don't know, maybe he won't get hurt, and so like I get to see him in the NFL more, I get to talk about him more as a draftable prospect, whatever, so silver lining, I guess. But I want to see this dude ball out. I want to see him get good opportunities to dominate some college-level players because I think he's got the tools, I think he's got the skill set to do it, and he's just not being utilized the way that he needs to. I understand that this isn't necessarily the strength of what Purdue's trying to do, and I also obviously understand that Rondale Moore is going to be the focal point of this offense, but that doesn't mean Bryson Hopkins can't get more involved in what he is right now. And so when I was looking at his stats, when I was like, man, I haven't heard about Bryson Hopkins in a while, let's get this dude the ball. He deserves to. I think he's a top 50 player in this class. Like I said, he's a stud. I would love to see over the next 6 to 8 weeks, whatever it is, Bryson Hopkins get a lot more of the workload, right. Get him at least over 40 catches, see if he can get over 500 yards and get maybe even close to double-digit touchdowns. I think he is certainly good enough to do that, even with somewhat of what I would call a slow start for his talent here 4 games in.
And it's interesting because, with, like I said, Rondale Moore, not being as big a part of the offense, he's dealt with some health issues. Purdue has generally struggled this year. But with Hopkins, in terms of getting him targets, it's not like this is a player who has to line up in spot X. Like, they line him up as an H-back, as an inline guy, and then as a flex Y. So, it's not a question of like, oh, well, like, our offense is built to feed this position. He doesn't play this position. You can put this dude anywhere, and he's going to be successful. Like, he has the athleticism to win from pretty much any alignment. There's no, get the ball to your best players.
Yeah.
I really agree to you in that sense. I think there's nothing prohibitive about his game that's like, well, we want to run, these bubble screens and these smoke routes and, these plays need to go to wide receivers. Hopkins is great with the ball in his hands. Just get the ball out there. So, yeah, I hear that a lot. Monday, we're recording on Monday, Joe put him at 32 in his mock to the Patriots.
Listen,
this might be a little early, but he's got the talent.
Oh yeah,
can't fault him for that.
Oh no, I wouldn't fault him for that at all. I love the move. Bryson Hopkins is going to be in most of my first round mock drafts, I think. I think he's a good mismatch player. All right,
you put him in your most recent mock first round?
Did I put him in the most recent one? I have one coming up this Monday, this next Monday. So I'll put him at number 1 overall, just for you.
Hey, thanks, man.
All right, what are we doing next? Which one do you want to do next?
Run to the tape.
Okay, you or me?
Because we were talking about Purdue. I have the player who played Purdue. His name is Shaka Toney, which Brock Purdy and now Shaka Toney. I am having a great
that's a good name,
day
man.
For names.
Yeah, you better put Jet Toner somewhere in here.
Did you and Alyssa just discover Jet Toner?
Yeah, I didn't know who Jet Toner was.
Y'all need to watch some more Cardinal football, brother.
No, thank you. That would mean I'd have to watch David Shaw's coaching.
Yeah, honestly, it's a great point, and Shaw's coaching drives me up the wall. But
up
Jet Toner
the wall. Yeah,
Toner's been there for a while, and he's good. He's draftable.
Okay.
We're talking about Stanford's punter, by the way, Jet Toner. Anyway. Shaka Toney.
No, we're talking about the new printer I just bought, Jet Toner.
Shaka Toney is a redshirt junior edge from Penn State, originally from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, sir.
Here we go.
And that's the only reason I like him. No. Shangatoni is the edge who plays opposite Yetur Gross-Matos on the Penn State defense. Penn State defense, which has been quite good in the early goings of 2019. Last year, Tony totaled 7 tackles for loss and 5 sacks. Played 10 total games. He lost a couple games to injury. This year, through 5 games, he has 5.5 tackles for loss and 5 sacks. We've matched our sack total for last year. We've almost matched our tackle for loss total. He had an unbelievably dominant game against Purdue. 3 total tackles for loss and 3 sacks. So he was, in a word, all over the place. Now, if you remember from our edge scouting series, I was not the biggest fan of Yetur Gross-Matos. And he didn't make my top 5 edges. He still remains not in my top 5 edges to my October update on my positional rankings, which you can find at thedraftnetwork.com. Gross-Matos is very toolsy, and that body type is unbelievable, and he's got the length and the size to be very successful. But right now, not a lot of it is put together. I'm here to tell you, Shakatoni at 6'4", 243, has all the tools, and it's not really put together yet. So this is a similar, you know, in terms of developmental track, we're at a similar place as we are with YGM. He's not yet a finished product, but man, the Purdue offensive line is bad. There's no two ways about that. I've seen them in person twice. It's not a good unit. But Tony, explosiveness off the ball is explosive off the ball. There's no two ways to slice it. And this dude flies off the snap. That X4 star, he was the number 2 defensive end recruit out of Pennsylvania. I think he was the number 2 Pennsylvania recruit in the 2016 class. The first 3 steps, they're unteachable, right? Talk about unteachable traits. Kid was born taking first 3 steps. I mean, it's lightning how quick he gets to that outside shoulder. And then he clearly has the ability to reduce the surface area, run under that table, fly into the quarterback. And so it's that moment. And I think this is a moment you really get mostly with edge rushers because of just the way, you know, the camera is centered on the trenches and just watching the play develop from the offensive line and then to the ball. I think discovering edges is probably one of the most fun things you do on a TV copy just because – there's that moment where a dude bends the corner and you go, okay, that's not regular. And I know it's not. I don't even need to see that many more reps to know it's not. Like, you can ID it pretty quick. Tony ripped Purdue to shreds, and it's because he's got some natural gifts. So I am in charge of the scouting assignments for every week.
Yes, you are.
I assigned myself Shakatoni because went straight to my head.
Of course you did.
And I can't wait to watch him this week. I'm super pumped. 3 sacks against a bad Purdue line is a bad Purdue line, but it definitely caught my eye, and he's been uber productive over the course of the short beginning to 2019. So Shakatoni, edge out of Penn State, seems like a lot of fun.
My run to the Tate player. I didn't see a lot of this game this week, but I read a lot about this player, and that's why I'm going to have to run to some tape this week. Ohio State's right guard, Wyatt Davis. I read a lot about him on Twitter this week, and after doing a little bit more digging, Davis, he's a former five-star guy. He took over as a redshirt
at Ohio State.
Whoa. Yeah, I know. Hard to believe, right? He took over at the end of last season as a redshirt freshman, and he played really well down the stretch there. Been a starter this season at right guard. Had a couple of plays this week against Michigan State where he just whooped up on some people, okay? Moves really well. Has a lot of power. Seems really smart as an interior offensive lineman already. Moving guys off, helping out with double teams, being able to put power in one direction but keep his eyes on another one. I noticed they pulled him a little bit on certain counter plays as well. Then I did a little bit more research on him. Cole Kubelik, who works for SEC Network, he said that Davis has been the best offensive lineman he has watched 6 weeks into the season. I did a little bit more digging, found that PFF loves Wyatt Davis so far this season, and so I don't know a ton about him, only from the little clips that I saw. And some of the information that I obviously gathered other than being intrigued, but this is a player who now I got to run and go find some tape on him because we've got some respected people who are doing grades and watching tape saying that this guy is one of the best interior offensive linemen that they've watched this season. Obviously a five-star guy means that he had a lot of talent coming out of high school, playing at a school like Ohio State, starting already as a redshirt sophomore. Makes a lot of sense. And so this is a guy that I'm really excited to go put some tape on because outside of the known players that we've kind of had on our radar really ever since the summer on the interior offensive line, I feel like I haven't really noticed any new players amongst the interior offensive line guys. I've noticed a couple of new tackles that I've been able to get on my radar and I've watched a little bit of, but there hasn't been a lot of new players on the interior offensive line that I've been able to take a look at. Really excited to get to Davis because of how well everybody is and how highly people are speaking of him. And in the clips that I saw, he looks like he's bringing some attitude, some strength, and some brains to an interior offensive line position. So he's my run of the tape guy.
There's no position I'm more proud of for our big boys in our positional rankings and our predictive board, especially for the mock draft machine, than offensive line. Because when we first, brought together, I can't remember the word, aggregated, I guess, all of the scouting reports we had all done over the summer, we had, 45 wide receivers, 50 running backs, 40 corners, 90 edges, and 12 offensive tackles.
Yeah.
And I was like, shoot, we got to fix this. And so for the first, 2 months of the season, it's just been all right, everybody, hunt for good offensive line talent, which is not the most thrilling thing in the world, but it's good. I mean, we've got seniors from every Power 5 program written up. It's pretty sick. So, got to add Wyatt Davis to the list now. I've already got him written down.
What's left? Best thing I saw in scouting?
Best thing I've seen in scouting, yeah. Okay. So, for me, there are three players right now who I'm significantly lower, not than consensus on, but then pretty much every member of TDN staff. I'm Troy Dye, the consensus. But there are other guys on staff who are low on him. There are three guys who I'm just the only one on staff who's on an island right now in terms of being a little lower than everybody else. One is Kalevon Chase in the edge out of LSU. Still don't get the super excitement with him. Number two is Jalen Reagor. And again, I'm only 30 spots lower than the average for the rest of staff. But the rest of staff has him a top 30 player, and I'm just not there on Jalen Reagor.
I know. I think I'm closest to you then.
Yeah, I think you and I are pretty close on Reagor, but everybody's head over heels it's a potential first round wide receiver, and I just can't get my head around that just yet.
Uh-huh.
So he had a good game in garbage time. He had a good game against Iowa State, made some contested catches, which was a big knock that I had against him. And then the last one is Michigan State linebacker Joe Bocci. Now, I feel similarly to Joe Bocci as I did about Cameron Smith out of USC in 2019 and how I felt about Josie Jewell out of Iowa in 2018. I love everything you're doing, but sweetie, when it's time to get on the horse, you just don't seem to have the juice.
Uh-huh.
And that's the thing is these are old school backers. They would have been really, really good in a different era of football, but you just need more from your linebackers in terms of sideline to sideline range. And I just did not think you had that from a Joe Bocci. And then in zone coverage, you can be slow on the uptake and have poor explosiveness and poor agility, but you can at least have some good feel. I thought Bocci was really lost in zone coverage. And then his 2018 film from Michigan State. And I watched a lot of Michigan State defense. It was one of my assignments. So I felt comfortable saying that I'm out on Bocci. Watched the Ohio State game.
Yes.
And then went back and watched some more Michigan State defense this year. Bocci's quicker. There's no doubt in my mind he's faster. And that is a big deal. Cameron Smith, USC, if you remember last year, cut 20 pounds. And then he was not faster. So pointless. Bocci probably cut a little bit of weight. I don't think he got too much. But he's clearly faster. And that's a huge, huge, huge deal because he is smart, he is aggressive, and he is a tremendous tackler between the tackles. On the run, not as great, but quickness helps with that. He is a great, great, great form tackler between the tackles. This is a strong, dynamic, initiate contact, up in your grill player. And he had a really strong game against Ohio State, 2 sacks against Justin Fields, both of which, it wasn't like he came blitzing off the blind side and took Fields' top off. Fields saw him coming, and Fields is a shaky dude. That is not a fun player to tackle. Bocci was able to get him down both times. Bocci got a big tackle race. He's a long dude. He's a strong dude, big grip strength. But he had the movement skills to keep track on Justin Fields. He ends up getting 9 tackles on the game, which was near the lead, if not for the fact that the starting Michigan State corner had 12 tackles because they kept targeting him. But Bocci paced the game from the inside. He was a highly effective blitzer, which is one of his best traits, and he clearly is moving faster this year. So of those players who I was a little bit tepid on coming into the year, the one who has stood out to me as making the changes I wanted to see from him is Joe Bocci. Am I fully in love with Joe Bocci? By no means. But I think that he clearly took the input that he got from scouting sources and from the feedback that he got from the committee.
Sure.
And he has manifested that into his training so that he can better profile to the NFL. And I respect that. I acknowledge that. So Joe Bocci, best thing I saw in scouting was the improvements that we've got from a very likable Michigan State linebacker.
I'm going to cheat a little bit here.
Oh, shocking. Wow.
In my best thing I saw in scouting, I'm going to list a player who I do not believe is draft eligible.
You coward!
Puka Williams Jr.
This is the Kansas running back.
Okay, you broke up super bad there, and that was an important part of the podcast, so I'm just going to say it again. Puka Williams Jr. Nothing, Ben? You weren't going to repeat it?
I wasn't sure. I broke up the last time. You yes. put me in a bind here,
yes,
brother.
Yes, this is the Kansas running back.
Yeah.
He is Puka Williams Jr., 5'10", maybe. 170 pounds, maybe, from New Orleans, Louisiana. He was the, what was he ranked in the state of Louisiana? He was one of the highest rated recruits in Louisiana, I remember. He's a four-star.
Kansas?
Yeah, he was a four-star recruit. He did former track stuff. He was the New Orleans Metro Player of the Year. Rushed for 1,100 yards on 161 carries, which is over 100 yards per game and more than 7 yards per carry last season. He goes up against Oklahoma, and I'm thinking, okay, this is a blowout, right? It's not, I mean, like, not really a big reason for me to watch this game, but I'm going to pop on the highlights, see what Jalen Hurts did, see how CeeDee Lamb cooked somebody. Let's watch some good offensive plays. First three plays are Puka Williams. Just straight destroying pursuit angles from these Oklahoma guys. And it's almost like they just, like, woke up. You know, they were like, okay, they actually, LSU actually has somebody. And this LSU kid is good, man. He was one of only two players in the Big 12 last year to record a 100-yard rushing game and a 100-yard receiving game. And that Jalen Reagor was the other one. Which is funny that we talked about Jalen Reagor earlier in this podcast. But the reason why he was the best thing I saw in scouting is because, one, we don't really get a lot of scouting guys that we're getting from Kansas, so big shout-out Kansas. Two, like, this dude's a legit offensive weapon. I think that this guy, when he got the ball, he did a little stutter step, he had some patience behind the offensive line, he found the hole, he put his foot in the ground, and he went upfield. And he went upfield fast. This guy's got a ton of acceleration, he's got really nice top speed, and from what I saw in the game, he also knew how to read the offensive line a little bit. He knew where to go. He knew where space was going to be. He knew how to execute most of that speed that he had. And that is such a good attribute. We talk about guys who have the tools, the athletic ability, but you got to have above the shoulders, man. You got to figure out how to use it. You got to get to space. You've got to get to separation. You got to put yourself in the best situations to use the best of your talent and make it useful for your team. Puka Williams Jr. did an awesome job against Oklahoma doing that, and a team that had no business beating, probably no business competing against. He looked like a future NFL player in a matchup that was going to be very, very one-sided on future NFL players versus what was probably, at Kansas, not many future NFL players. He was a guy that really stood out to me, plus his first name is Puka, plus he wears the number one. I really, really like this kid. What he was able to do against Oklahoma and how he was able to say to one of the most talented teams in the country, I belong in the same field as you guys, and I'm even going to erase some of these angles, and y'all ain't going to be able to catch me. That was fantastic, especially at Kansas, so I wanted to make sure that I gave Kansas their props for one of their players that they had, because I was super impressed.
Yeah, no, Puka's he's a jitterbug, man. He's a joystick out there. He's fun. That's an entertaining player to watch any day of the week.
No question about it. Did we go through all of them? Because I didn't go through the best thing I saw this weekend.
That is. I mean, I also have a best thing I saw this weekend, but it's the Cincinnati tweet, so.
Okay, so, all right, you had the Cincinnati tweet. My last thing, just because I wanted to say it, I was at, you know, we talk college and NFL football all the time, and I bring this up mainly because we had somebody go see, which game was it? Was it, who were we talking about where we said, hey, go see this quarterback, it's like $8 to get in the game. And it was against
Jordan Love against was it, a super bad team.
Was it NC State or
no?
Who was it against? It was somewhere in North Carolina, I thought. Anyways, so
was it? But it was Utah State, right?
Brother, not fine.
Utah State against Stony Brook. Utah State against Wake Forest.
Was it Wake?
Week one.
No, it wasn't week one.
Well, that would have been week zero.
No, I don't think it was week zero. I'm gonna be so mad that we can't think of this. Whatever. Anyways, we had somebody go to a game because we recommended that they go to the game to go watch it in person. And they went to it, and they tweeted at us. They're like, hey, I had a blast. Thanks for letting me know about it. We loved hearing that you got to go to the game. I was in Gainesville for Florida-Auburn this weekend. I went to Florida, so obviously the game itself meant a lot to me. It was fun to be as a fan.
Chomp, chomp.
I know this because I grew up in a house that neither of my parents went to college, so I never had like this collegiate alliance. College football was not a big part of me growing up. I watched it, you know, I watched the bigger games because it was football to watch on Saturdays, but I never had this passion to tap into. I'd never been to a college football game until I went to the Swamp in 2012. I didn't really care about it. The atmosphere that I got to experience this weekend, and some of the other atmospheres that I've got to experience at the Swamp and other college football venues, it really is stuff as a football fan and just as a sports fan that I will remember for the rest of my life. It is such a cool feeling being in the stands. And I totally get that, you know, I'm not sitting here like Pat Fitzgerald, where I'm like telling people to get up out of their seats and go to the games, like an old man shaking at the cloud. I totally get staying at home. It's relaxing. You get to watch a million games. It is fun. But I am saying that if you have never been to a college football game, and I can say that at a small level or even sometimes a primetime game that might be near you in the biggest college football city that you have, go to a game. Go to at least one. Experience what it's like watching 90,000 people lose their mind cheering for a team. And I hope you get to witness a home win, because it is truly one of the coolest things in sports, the college football atmosphere. And I just wanted to say that because being in the Swamp this weekend, every single defensive series, that place was as loud as it could possibly be. It was rocking. You made friends with everybody around you because, you know, you were talking about the game. You were getting into it. You were just talking ball. You were having a great time watching it and being there. If you've never experienced that, my message to you is go out and do it. Even if you're not a big fan of whoever it might be, go see a big-time college football game if you ever can. I'm sure there's going to be one that'll be affordable that you might be able to go to. Don't let it pass you by. It is such a cool thing to go and witness in person. I want to make sure that everybody always gets that chance, because it's one of the coolest feelings to be in a stadium like that where nearly 100,000 people are all screaming their head off and going crazy, and getting to witness that is just such a cool thing.
That was very moving, Trevor.
Thanks. No, I just, you know, I'm looking for, I want people to experience the best things in life. And I know that a lot of people are sports fans and football fans in general that listen to this podcast. I also know that some people are much more NFL fans and NFL people than they are college football people. But even to you guys, I was much more of an NFL person growing up. But let me tell you, you still got to go to a college football game. Go experience it. Go have fun. All right, Ben, it's time.
Ironhead.
It is time for the Thick Boy of the Week Award.
No. Okay, so listen. Firstly, big shout out to everybody who helped out by sending us a large variety of plays, tagging us in big offensive lineman plays over the weekend.
Continue to please do this. Yes. We want to give the award to by far the best Thick Boy, and y'all are our eyes as well. So if you see a Thick Boy going off, make sure you hit us up on Twitter at Tampa Bay Trey or at Benjamin Solak. You guys even send me some stuff on Instagram too, so keep doing that. Yeah. Just piggybacking off that, we appreciate it.
Yeah. We were not wanting for nominees this week. As a matter of fact, we have four that are all very valid and very worthy. We selected one, but to run through the other three very quickly. Number one, Derrick Brown.
Oh man,
the old Derrick Brown brother. And this is the rough thing, because last week we gave it to Miron Tagovailoa-Amosa, the defensive lineman from Notre Dame, who almost had a kick off, a fumble return for a touchdown. And that's dangerous precedent. We don't want to be telling thick boys everywhere, listen, you don't have to score. We'll give it to you. That's not – this is a high standard over here at this very legitimate award that we spent a lot of time thinking about.
Yeah.
Derrick Brown on the interior bull rush against Florida. Teammate Marlon Davidson strips the ball. Derrick Brown, flawless execution of the scoop. Important to note, there's some flexibility involved there. A lot of defensive tackles eat dirt right after the scoop.
Yeah.
Brown picks that thing up and tucks it like he's meant to. Opens the tank Big long strides, got the belly jiggling. I respect it a great deal. Breaks what should be the last tackle he has to worry about. Crosses the 35-yard line. He's sniffing Pater just like Tagovailoa Mosa did. And then the big green monster gets him. Derek Brown, if you had housed this, you probably would have won the award. Next time, keep your feet under you. Trust your blockers. Bring it home. Dude, that was number one. Number two.
Hold on just real quick.
Yes.
That Florida-Auburn game was an awesome game to be at. It had some offensive struggles for sure, but out of all the players that played in that game that are going to be in the NFL someday, Derek Brown was the best player on the field.
That's a good ball player. Number two, Samuel Cosmi, left tackle for Texas. We actually have a report up on this young man. He's a redshirt sophomore. We've known he's a great athlete. You can see that on the tape. What we didn't know is that Texas was willing on first and 10 from the 12 to execute a long, like a long developing throwback screen to Cosmi, who was uncovered, eligible. Actually, no, he wasn't. It was just a lateral because he got all the way behind Sam Ellinger. But either way, he catches the ball at the 22-yard line with two blockers in front of him. Again, tucks that ball like he was born to do it. Hits the jet. Sam Cosmi can move a little bit. And then it's a race to the pylon with like a corner who clearly does not want to be here right now. Like, this is not what he signed up for at all. Sam Cosmi licks this corner right at the pylon. Ends up beating turf a little bit, but does score. So big man touchdown for Texas. However, he is not the thick boy of the week. Number two finisher is a high school player named Ja'Cory Williams, St. Joseph Catholic High School. They're running some sort of two-point conversion play. And it's like a Mike Leach-looking situation, right? Like, the whole offensive line is lined up to one side of the field, and the guy snapping at the center is, like, totally alone. And Ja'Cory Williams is just in the backfield. Number 77 is a large young man. He's a big fella. And he starts running like jet motion parallel to the line. And you're wondering to yourself, what could possibly be the plan here with this weird formation, with this very large offensive lineman running in motion? And then Ja'Cory, with inexplicable fluidity, with the grace of God, hits a cartwheel, another cartwheel, and then jumps into a split. The belly is coming out of
it
the
is.
Jersey. It is not tucked in. It is, dude, it's full exposure. He's striped like Waldo, and he hits that split, and you can tell he's real proud of what he just executed. This is a distraction unlike what I've ever seen. Ja'Cory would have absolutely won this award for the thick boy flexibility.
Had it not been for.
Highly valued. If it not been for one Andrew Rupsich. Andrew Rupsich is an offensive tackle at the university at Culver Stockton College, which plays for the NAIA. It is in Canton. And boy, I looked as hard as I could to prove that Andrew Rupsich has some sort of quarterback training or experience in his background. I was not able to confirm it. I went into his junior varsity huddle highlights. I could not find a rep of him taking a snap.
I respect the level of snooping.
The Culver Stockton College Wildcats, who, by the way, their hashtag is like repair the roar or return the roar or something like that. I don't like it very much. But anyway, execute another throwback screen to their offensive tackle. However, this time, they're right about at the 50. Rupsich catches this thing at his own 48. Two hitches and launches like his mama taught him. This spiral could cut glass, Trevor. This yeah. is 50. This is 50 air yards, man. This dude's got a cannon. And listen, the J-path, the cocked elbow at zero position, the triple extension that I can't see on the camera angle, but I'm just going to assume it happened. This is beautiful mechanics.
Yes.
This is
yes.
As far as non-quarterbacks throwing the ball for touchdowns, it goes number one, Mohamed Sanu, and number two, this kid. Unbelievable. The Pillsbury throw boy right over here launches an absolute seed down the field, hits his wide receiver in stride, touchdown Wildcats. This throw was on. It was on Sunday Night Football at halftime. Rich Eisen, ESPN, Trey Wingo, Scott Van Pelt, that's the dude with the glasses. Unbelievable throw from Rupsich, number 78 left tackle for the Wildcats up there in Canton. This is a beautiful pass. If you haven't seen it, go find it. It's not hard to find. And what I respect most is Rupsich correctly riding the wave of his clout has retweeted pretty much every mention of his throw there is on the internet. His current profile picture is the photo of him throwing this ball, and it looks just like an offensive lineman throwing the ball. It's god ugly. This still shot is terrible. He should have somehow made it a GIF because the throw looks a lot better in motion. his banner photo is him jumping to block a kick, and he's like 8,000 feet above everybody else. Clearly a great athlete. And his Twitter bio is just your friendly giant from McHenry, Illinois. So Andrew Robsich, congratulations. You are the winner of the Ironhead Hayward Thick Boy of the Week Award in a thick competition, if you do pardon the pun.
Wow. What a week. What a wonderful week in college football.
It was a week for thick boys, man.
What a wonderful week in college football. Good thing we got more this next week. And we're going to talk about all of that tomorrow when we preview week 7 of the college football. Man, week 7. We're like halfway done.
What?
What the hell, man?
Hate to see it.
Damn. You hate to see it. No, that shout out Cincinnati. So we are previewing. Yeah, full circle. We're previewing college football tomorrow. Previewing the NFL the next day, getting to your crazy, ridiculous Fan Friday questions the day after that, then obviously getting to kick back, watch a ton of football on Saturday and Sunday, then get right back to it on Monday. Maybe, you know, Ben and I talked about having a little bit of funerals for some NFL teams on Monday, but hey.
Yeah, we need funeral dirge music to play.
That is all, I could talk to our producer, see what we could do.
Yes.
But that's all way getting ahead of ourselves. Make sure you guys tune in tomorrow. We're going to preview all of college football. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.